Hi, everyone. It's Rick Reisman with you today. When I was on the last time, I told you that I was going to call my podcast Behind the Curtain. And the more I thought about it, the more that didn't seem to be the right title. Number one, I'm not behind the curtain anymore. I'm kind of out front now. And so that title doesn't really make sense to me. And the more I thought about it, the one that really struck me is, and let me give you the background as to why I chose this name. So, I'm just walking on, going to restaurants, having lunch, whatever, wherever I'm at. Somebody always seems to come up to me and say, hey, Mayor Kreisman, I know you're not mayor anymore, but I'm curious to know, what do you think about this? And so that kind of struck me, and I thought, I'm asked all the time, what do I think about things? And so that seems to me to be really the perfect name for a podcast, which is, well, here's what I think with Rick Kreisman. And so today I thought, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I think about climate change. And if this isn't on your mind, if you haven't been thinking about climate change, you really ought to be. And all you have to do is look at what the recent tragedy that just happened in Hill Country in Texas with the flash flooding. In the past year, ask yourself this, how often have you heard somebody use the phrase, well, it's been a 100-year storm or a 250-year event or a 500-year event? The events that have triggered the use of these phrases have been occurring with far greater frequency than 100, 250, or even 500 years. So if we're going to talk about climate change and the impacts of it and how often it's happening and things of that sort, I think we first need to talk about what does that mean? What does the term climate change even mean? People throw it around frequently and nobody really talks about, well, what are we really talking about when we're talking about climate change? So climate change refers to the long-term shifts in weather patterns and in average temperatures. Now, when you talk about climate change, you have to talk about the role that we as humans have played in adding to climate change by releasing greenhouse gases into the air through our use of oil, of gas, of coal, as well as modern farming methods. And when we cut down trees in our forests, all of that has an impact on adding to and creating climate change. Greenhouse gases trap the sun's heat, and they cause the planet's temperature to rise. So let me give you some statistics if we're talking about climate change. Since the 19th century, the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has increased by 50%. And the world is between 1 degree Celsius and 1.2 degrees Celsius higher and hotter than it was in the late 1800s. The temperatures are predicted to rise by 3.2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. And the past decade is likely to have been the hottest period, and get this, in the last 125,000 years. The hottest period in 125,000 years. The International Panel on Climate Change concluded that between 2016 and 2020, was the hottest five-year period recorded since at least 1850. Now, according to data from NASA, CO2 is at its highest point in more than 2 million years. And according to Wired, the last time the atmosphere contained as much CO2 as it does now was more than 3 million years ago, when seas were much higher and trees grew on the South Pole. For us here in Florida, here's a stat that should scare the bejeebies. That's my technical term, the bejeebies. This should scare the bejeebies out of you. According to the National Academy of Sciences, global sea levels rose by roughly 8 inches in the past century. More importantly, the rate of increase over the past two decades is nearly double that of the past century. In January 2025, was the warmest on record globally, with Arctic warming over the next five extended winters from November to March predicted to be more than 3.5 times the global average at 2.4 degrees Celsius above average temperatures. Just a couple more quick stats. Extreme weather events like heat waves, wildfires, and floods continue to be more frequent and intense. Certainly, I think we should add hurricanes to that list. All we have to do is look back a year, and we got hit by two of them. And 750 billion tons of ice is melting annually due to global warming. So in the face of what I think are really daunting statistics, what are we as a city, as a state, as a nation, as a world, what are we doing to address the impacts of climate change? Well, when I was first elected to the House of Representatives in 2006, I was a ranking member on the Committee on Energy, and we weren't really even allowed to discuss climate change or sea level rise unless we were talking about it from an economic development standpoint. In fact, I want to encourage you, if you want a laugh, and it's kind of a sad laugh, go and Google Senate committee meeting in climate change, and you'll see one of the senators was questioning a member of Governor Rick Scott's team about climate change, and he could not get him to use the term climate change. It was so obvious that this person was refusing to utter the words climate change that all the members, Republican and Democrat alike, were basically laughing about the fact that they couldn't get this member of Governor Rick Scott's staff to use the words climate change. Now, when I was in office back then, I filed several bills to try and see if we could take some effort in Florida to address climate change. Unfortunately, none of those bills were ever heard in committee. And the legislature back when I served from 2006 to 2012 really took no meaningful action to address climate change. And quite frankly, there hasn't been a whole lot that's been done since that time. And in fact, if anything, we're taking steps backward. So less than 1% of electricity in Florida comes from wind and solar. We are the Sunshine State. St. Pete is the Sunshine City. So you would think we would be doing everything we can to encourage the use of solar. We certainly did in St. Pete with some of our programs like the Solar Co-op and the SELF program. But nationally, during President Trump's first term in office, he pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. Now, again, it was up to cities, and I think it was really the leadership of cities all around the country when that happened that said, wait a minute, this is a real issue. It's affecting our communities. We have to do something. So in St. Pete, we joined Ready for 100. I joined more than 407 mayors from all over the country as part of the mayor's national climate action agenda, and actually from all over the world who stood up and said, even if the United States is out of Paris Climate Accord, we are still in. In 2015, I signed an executive order creating the Office of Sustainability and committing our city to transition to becoming 100% clean and renewable, using 100% clean renewable energy by 2030, and to reduce our carbon footprint by 80% by 2050. And with City Council's approval of this commitment, St. Petersburg became the first city in Florida and the 20th city in the country to make this commitment. I'm very proud of that. And we should be very proud of our community and our city council for standing up and saying, we're still in, we believe in climate change, and we know what the impact of climate change and sea level rise is going to have on our city. We also applied for, and we're one of 25 cities from around the country to be the recipient of the Bloomberg Philanthropies American Cities Climate Challenge. As an award recipient, we were accepted into a two-year program that provided us with resources and support that would help us meet those goals that I just talked about, becoming 100% renewable by 2030 and reducing our carbon footprint by 80% by 2050. And we came up with a plan, and Sharon Wright was our director of sustainability at the time that really shepherded this plan, of creating something called an ISAP, an ISAP, or an Integrated Sustainability Action Plan. This was really our roadmap that we were going to use, and the city is continuing to use as its guide to help it meet those goals for 2030 and 2050. So a couple examples of things we did. I mentioned partnering with Solar United Neighbors to create the co-op to make solar more accessible and affordable. I also mentioned the SELF, which is a solar and energy loan fund, making solar more attainable and affordable for those in moderate to low income families. When we built our new police station, the entire roof of the parking garage is covered with solar panels. And if you go out to the pier, my guess is you've probably been out there at least once already, because it's been incredibly well attended by people. But the covered parking in your dock forwards is also made up all of solar panels. In 2018, we joined the Tampa Bay Regional Resilience Coalition, which was a group of 24 municipalities in the Tampa Bay area to coordinate climate adaptation and mitigation activities across county lines and to advocate for local and regional responses to and the preparation for economic and social disruption that will be caused by climate crisis. I mean, when you're talking about climate change, really, it has to cross county lines. It has to be city to city. If it's just St. Petersburg, if it's just the state of Florida, if it's just the United States that are taking actions to address climate change, the impacts, while that work is important, the impacts in the long term aren't going to be nearly as significant as if we can get partners. And that's why the mayors that I talked about, the 407 mayors joining the National Climate Action Agenda, why that was so important, because we need everyone on board if we're going to really have an impact on climate change. So one of the big questions that I get asked about all the time, what do you think about this, Mayor, is mitigation versus adaptation. So let me first tell you what those words mean. Mitigation focuses on reducing greenhouse gas emissions to slow down or prevent further warming, meaning it's really tackling the root of climate change problem. Adaptation involves adjusting to the current and future impacts of climate change. And what that means is focusing on managing the consequences of climate change. And so, you know, when I look at what we're doing here right now in the state of Florida, what concerns me the most is that as a state, the administration, and I'm glad at least they're focused on something, even if they won't talk about climate change, at least they're taking some action to have an impact on it. But where their focus right now seems to be almost exclusively is on adaptation. There really isn't much of a focus on mitigation. If there was, there would be policies and plans in place to encourage the use of solar, to encourage the use of LED lighting, to encourage people to become more resilient and sustainable and work on putting more energy efficiencies into their homes with better insulation and, you know, more energy efficient appliances. Those would be the things we'd be focused on, because that has an impact directly on climate change and on the expansion of climate change. Instead, what we've been focused on is, as I mentioned, adaptation. And here's the reason I think that's a real problem. Both mitigation and adaptation are expensive. But the more effectively we mitigate climate change, the less we have to spend on adaptation. And that's always the biggest challenge for any government, actually for any of us as individuals. If we want to do things to impact climate change on our own, most of the things that we want to do cost money. And funding is always an issue. And so the actions that we need to take, for example, to reduce our greenhouse gases and become 100% renewable, the things that we did while I was in office were very challenging because there really wasn't any federal funding at that time that was available to assist us. Now, during the time that Joe Biden was president, there was $369 billion that was dedicated to address climate change through the Inflation Reduction Act. And so there was an effort, at least from a federal government standpoint, to say, look, we know there's an issue. It needs to be addressed. And we're going to get the hands into those who can best address it, which is local governments. And so that's that. Those dollars have been made available. Unfortunately, with the new administration that came in, the focus and the emphasis on providing resources to address climate change have gone away. The emphasis on climate change and on policies that would impact climate change also seem to be being reversed, and in some cases are completely going away. And for all of us here in the state of Florida, and really everywhere around the country, it ought to be a concern. And we ought to be speaking up and saying, wait a minute, you know, the number of hurricanes that we're seeing here in Florida, the frequency of them, the intensity is increasing. The number of wildfires that you're seeing around the country, certainly in California, is a great example. They seem to be increasing, and the intensity of them seems to be increasing. The amount of flash floods that are happening around the country in places we never thought of, certainly in Texas, the area that unfortunately just got hit, that area is known as Flash Flood Alley. But who would have thought that in places like Asheville, North Carolina, we'd see the kind of flooding that had the devastating impacts on property and human life that we've seen? And it's increasing. The number of these storms and the intensity of these storms is increasing. And so whether we want to believe the science or not, we certainly need to be doing things to try and reduce the number of our impact on climate change, and hopefully as a result of that, decrease the frequency and intensity of the storms that we're seeing. We ought to be spending the money, and quite frankly, this is an economic development issue, and it's an affordable housing issue also. If you haven't thought about it from that standpoint, you should, because look at all the jobs that were created here in Florida when there were incentives for solar energy and for electric vehicles. There's been hundreds and thousands of jobs created, not just in the state of Florida, but around the country because of that. And from an affordability standpoint, from a housing affordability standpoint, one of the main costs that is killing homeowners and making homeownership unaffordable is the cost of flood insurance and insurance, property insurance in general. That's all being driven by the amount of claims that are being filed due to the storms and the wildfires and the flooding and all of these incidents and events that we're seeing that are, again, caused by climate change. So this is an issue that certainly here in Florida and in St. Petersburg, as we are a city that is a peninsula on a peninsula, that we all ought to be talking about. And when we go to the ballot box every election cycle, we ought to be looking to support candidates who understand that this is something that impacts all of us in Florida, that puts our property and our lives at risk, that can have a positive and a negative impact on us, on our economy, and also can have a positive and a negative impact on our ability to own a home or afford a home or a rental apartment. So in my mind, that's what I'm getting asked all the time about. It's one of the things that people are asking about and ask me, hey, Mayor, what do you think about that? And so I'm going to come back to you again in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk about something else that somebody has said, hey, Mayor Christman, well, what do you think about that? And I'll come in and I'm going to tell you exactly. Here's what I think about that. So thanks for listening today.